This is the Culture and Conversations Podcast. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you part of the conversation. Hey guys, thank you guys for listening to, downloading, and subscribing to Culture and Conversations. I appreciate you sharing this on your social media. And before we get too far into the episode, please go by iTunes or your favorite podcasting application and leave me a 5-star review, letting other potential listeners know that Culture and Conversations is worth a download. This episode of Culture and Conversations is very special. I'm introducing my new YouTube series I'm recording called The Sit Down. It's a video series that I'm recording of interviews that I conduct at my house, and I'm going to play the audio of that for you up next on Culture and Conversations. Culture and Conversations family, this is the first episode of The Sit Down. The Sit Down is going to be the video content for the podcast where I have people over to my house and we sit down and talk. And the first question I got asked when I started this podcast, about around episode 19, 20, 21, 22, I think it's 23 actually, 23, by Brandy Thomas, was when would I let someone help me tell my story? So who better to have over for the first episode of The Sit Down than Brandy? So,
hey, I'm so excited to be doing this. I hope you're very excited.
I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited. So,
asking all those hard-hitting questions. You know, we don't have the Kleenex. You might need them, but just use your sleeve. You know?
I hope I don't cry.
Oprah and Barbara Walters, they're my first.
Cool. So have at me.
Fantastic. Awesome. Okay. So before we get to Jameson today, I want to know about what went into making Jameson the man.
Okay.
So I happen to know.
Okay.
You're from Morven.
I'm from Morven, Georgia, yes.
You're from Morven, Georgia. Tell me about Morven, Georgia when Jameson was growing up. What would I see? What would I be doing?
So Morven is a small town in South Georgia. We farm mostly for a living. Everybody in the area farms on some level. But me growing up, my father was a carpenter and my mother, she worked in the school system. And so I was a kid running around in a little town trying to stay out of trouble. So me and all my friends that I grew up with, we did all kinds of things. We rode bicycles, we played in different unsafe areas because we were boys and that's what boys did. Thankfully, I have all my fingers and toes, and I didn't lose an eye, because you know how it is, right? You know, black mothers would always say, be careful, boy, you're going to put your eye out. So, didn't put my eye out, and learned how to work hard growing up in that area, because that's all the type of work that there was. There was hard work. We didn't have a lot, but there was a lot of love there in the household, two-parent household. Parents are still married. And, yeah, so they're coming up on number 50 in a couple of years. So, yeah.
Incredible. What about high school, Jameson? Like, what was your guilty pleasure in high school?
So, I think for me, you know, you asked me kind of what went into me. So, I'm going to finish paying that off and then kind of talk about high school, Jameson. I got bullied growing up. I got picked on. So, I was different. You know how that is. If you're not like everybody else, then that gives them something to poke at. Mm-hmm. So, I had to learn how to deal with people and how to be myself in the world. And that wasn't easy. That was tough. You know, a lot of that, those experiences and those different moments still sort of helped shape me today. Mm-hmm. So high school Jameson still hadn't figured out exactly how to be himself yet. He was still growing in that area. I was still developing that sense of who I was. So did I have any guilty pleasures? Not really. I gotta be honest. I was kind of lame in high school by most kids' standards.
So high school Jameson, senior in high school, he never snuck out of the house. He didn't borrow his parents' car. He didn't. Really?
No, no.
You were wholesome. I love it.
I didn't get into trouble in high school, any of that. The worst happened was I got a speeding ticket with my brother. My brother was actually the one who got the speeding ticket, but I was in the car with him.
So you're an accessory.
I was. We were going to something for school where I had an awards night or something like that. And I had to go down, and he was driving because he wanted to drive. And you know how that is. And we were just going too fast and got a speeding ticket. So that's the worst of it.
Okay, just because you didn't get caught doesn't mean that you weren't into some mischief.
I'm telling you, I was really boring.
I need to find some of these high school kids. Because I feel like I'm not getting the whole story here.
No, I was boring.
We'll go with that.
I was really boring.
Okay. So. Well, what clubs were you in? I'm sure you were involved in something.
So, I was on the math team in high school. Wasn't really good as I needed to be on that level of math. I was just better at math than most people, but not everyone. Mm-hmm. I also was involved with, FFA. Future Farmers of America. So that was really cool, though, because you learn a lot of practical things with being a farmer. Because you have to work with your hands, you got to deal with producing food, you got to deal with, you know, animal husbandry, all that stuff, keep taking care of the livestock. And there was always something tangible at the end of it. You know, I still use a lot of stuff I learned in the FFA class in my life now. Like, you know, I can wire up stuff because of that, because of the stuff I got exposed to, and like literally do electrical work.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know why that surprises me, but it does. Okay. Fantastic. So. Okay. So I know that we met at Georgia Southern.
Yeah.
Where we both attended undergrad. When you were leaving Morven, did you have any, you know, final thoughts? Like, okay, goodbye Morven. Like, what was your swan song before you left Morven to head to Georgia Southern?
You know, I grew up somewhat resentful of being poor, and I didn't understand all of what went into us being poor. Now, don't get me wrong, there's different levels of poor,
right,
just like there's different levels of wealth. So we didn't have lights and stuff cut off, and we weren't going around, you know, without food and clothes and stuff like that. But the way I always describe how I grew up, there was no extra. Mm-hmm. And that really bothered me. Because I didn't understand how hard life was. So I kind of left home hoping that the journey through Georgia Southern, through education, would give me a chance to build my life so that I could have what I thought was, quote unquote, more. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I left. And then also, too, you know, because I was lame in high school, I got a chance to, you know, go to Georgia Southern and reinvent myself, or at least discover who I was, finish that discovery process. And while I would like to say that I got outside of my shell at Georgia Southern, which to some extent I did, I feel like I did turn into a bit of a butterfly at Georgia Southern finally. I still was pretty lame in college. And
I think that's relative. I wouldn't say you were lame, but I think everybody has their lame.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That was at least my perception of myself. I didn't feel like I was still a cool kid. I didn't feel like I was in the cool kid crowd at Georgia Southern. Even though I felt like when people got to know me, they were like, "Oh, he's a funny guy. He's a little quirky because he's a bit of a nerd, but I'm funny. So and different, and I have a perspective, and that developed a lot at Georgia Southern. Okay. It came together. So
when you entered Georgia Southern, did you have an idea of what your major would be or who you would be, and did that sort of shift
question.
At all?
That's a good question. So I came into Southern with this simple plan for what I was going to major in. If I got to Georgia Tech, which didn't happen, I was going to be a computer engineer because that's an engineering school.
Right.
That was all the logic there was to it. I knew I was good with computers, quote unquote, and I wanted to do something in computers, quote unquote. So then I was like, if I go to engineering school, I'm doing computer engineering. If I go to Southern, I'm going to do computer science because Georgia Southern is not engineering school. That was my logic.
Okay.
And it was by happenstance, providence, the you know, div- divine predestination that I got into a class, and that class actually was using a programming language I had got exposed to during my summer, one of my summers in high school. And when that happened, I just took to it like a fish in water. I said, I can do this. I got all the concepts, I understood it, and I was really ahead of everybody in the class because I had programmed before in that language. So I was, then I had the, you know, opportunity to just kind of learning and being immersed in it, and it became what I wanted to do. So I majored in computer science and graduated with a computer science degree in 4 years.
So is there anything about your time at Georgia Southern that you wish you had done differently or you could go back and get a redo?
Oh, I think I would have took another year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
Because I rushed through college. I kind of bought into this idea that, okay, I got to get out in 4 years. There's no rule that says you have to get out of college in 4 years. But I made that up because it just sounded like what you had to do, 4 years in college. Because you hear that all the time, four years in college. And I should have just taken another year to enjoy it. You know, yeah, I met a lot of amazing people, a lot of wonderful friends and colleagues and connections and just experiences and professors. And I was in an environment where I could literally blossom into anything. And here I was just kind of rushing through it to become a graduate. Not so much with a end destination in mind, but I just wanted to get done with it. Oh, just get it checked off. And no, college is just a great formative time in your life, and you should experience it, I think. So for me, I wish I could have just taken longer.
What do you feel like you didn't have enough time for? Like, why would that extra year have made a difference?
I think I would have just appreciated the people. It would have gave me a chance to build more relationships. It would have given me a chance to also just enjoy not having the responsibilities of being an adult. And I appreciate that, you know, even though school is challenging in its own right, it's still not the hardest thing I've had to deal with in my life. You know, at the time I thought it was, but you know, life has a way of showing you that there's more difficult things down the road if you just keep on living, as they would say. So
I know that you and I both were McNair Scholars.
Okay, yeah.
And that was a fantastic trip, I think. I think it was a great experience in general.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that helped you in your career at Georgia Southern or even post-graduation?
That's a good question. I think for me, it came back to help me understand that there just weren't a lot of people like me doing what it is I do. Because that was part of the charge of the McNair program, was to develop minorities academically so that they could get penetration into these different levels of higher education, like, you know, doctorate work and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So they were trying to cultivate PhDs from the minorities by giving us that extra nurturing, that extra love, that extra focus, helping us solve a lot of these systemic problems through education and through the preparatory work. And also that puts you on the radar for the universities. So I think what it taught me was just to begin to look at myself in the bigger picture, just how, I don't want to say how special I was, but how rare I am, if that makes sense. Because
mm-hmm.
rare doesn't necessarily mean special.
I think you're special.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. Appreciate that. At least somebody thinks I'm special. Yeah, we're keeping that one in. Yes, yes. But no, I think it's just you. I think you have to understand your place in the world, and that kind of helped me figure it out or begin to see a little bit of it. That hey, this is going to be not necessarily an uphill battle, but I'm going to be different, and everybody's going to know that I'm different because I do stick out. I'm a giant black guy who programs for a living. So when I walk in interviews, that catches people's eye. When I'm on the team, that's going to stand out. When I go and just do the work, and I talk to people about what I do, and it helped me realize how rare that is. Also, too, the academic rigor was cool. Writing that paper we had to write.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And also presenting it was good because I think it gave me a chance of learning how to communicate really technical stuff in a more approachable format for people. And that's something that is a skill that I have to use all the time. How do you communicate these technical concepts, these abstract things that live inside of the computer? How do you communicate that? And at the same time, accomplish your goal of getting people to buy into your ideas, to believe that you're credible when you present these things? How do you do all of that? And McNair was the first taste I had of that, you know, also with the college work I did, obviously, but it gave me that perspective on learning the importance of communication, also understanding, like I said, my place in the world, how rare I am, but at the same time, embracing that opportunity of being different and that I can be successful even though I am different.
Okay. So every senior who's getting ready to graduate from college, they have this idea of, okay, this is the job that I'm going to mm-hmm. do. This is the money I'm going to be making.
Sure.
How did that line up for you?
Oh, so my first job out of college, I did retail work, selling computers and TVs at Best Buy. One of the things I'll tell anybody is that if you can get the experience of selling stuff, really good experience to get. Especially if it's face-to-face sales where you're actually having to talk to people, that's really good. So part of that maturation process for me of developing a personality came in part with me having to talk to random strangers while standing on my feet 8 hours a day selling TVs and computers. And that actually led me into a moment in my life that was one of those formative moments. But I guess we can talk about that later.
No, let's hit it.
All right, so let me answer your question about the money and all that stuff. So it worked out. I mean, you know, working at Best Buy was making $8.25 an hour, I believe.
Was that a shock for you? I have a degree, and I'm making $8.25.
You know what? This is the weird part. It wasn't. Because even though I had a computer science degree, and this is going to sound, I know it's going to blow people's minds. Even though I had a computer science degree, I actually had a time where I considered not using it at all.
What?
Yeah.
Why in hell and what? Yeah, because okay, let me get myself together here.
Because it just I didn't have an on ramp coming out of college. I didn't have that ready made opportunity for me to go and do software development. So I was like, okay, I've been through 4 years of education. I've got this experience doing, you know, computer programming. What does that look like in my life? How am I going to, you know, do this work? And how am I going to get started doing this work? So I didn't have a plan. And I think that's my fault. You know, I have to take ownership of that. But at the same time, too, the job market was really crazy in 2005, 2006, roar. Because we had just come out of the tech bubble popping. So companies were very skittish about how they were spending technology money in their budgets. But I didn't feel that until I really started applying for jobs. But I came out of college, like I said, and didn't have a plan. So I said, well, I'll just figure it out. I'll go back home to Morven, take some time out, figure it out. And I went, and in part of doing that, that's when I got the job at Best Buy. Because you got to pay back them student loans, because they ain't going to give you time to figure out nothing.
Defer.
And I did that for a couple of months and then deferred. Then I got the job and I paid it, started paying it back. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, because, I mean, my goal was only to make, I felt like I could live a good life if I made $50,000 a year.
Okay.
So I felt like I could live a good life doing that. $8.25 is far from that, especially if you're not even full-time. So, you know, I felt like I just had to kind of start somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, and I was going to figure it out. And so it didn't bother me, my ego with the whole having a degree and then having a retail job. I knew it would happen at one point. I knew this was a bullet in my, you know, in my arsenal that I just had to fire one day, and then it would hit something, and I just had to find the right target, a target that would be approachable with my degree, my level of experience and my degree, and I just hadn't found that yet. So I never forget, I was selling, matter of fact, I was selling, I know exactly what I was doing, I was selling DVD burners, because that was the big thing at the time. Instead of having like a VCR, you had like a DVD that was like you could burn to, that you could record your shows with. And this guy comes in, him and his wife, older couple, look like they're early retirees, you know. And he starts asking me about these DVD recorders. And I said, well, you know, this is the best one. This is good. And, you know, this is okay. And I'm trying to kind of fill them out because you got to kind of feel, you know, do I need to lead you to the one that's more expensive, or do I can't, you know, do I need to give you the one that's a little cheaper? And in that process, I asked him, say, man, so, you know, if you don't mind me asking, I love talking to people, getting to know people. What do you do for a living? What did you do for a living? He said, oh, everything I worked on, he sent into space. And I said, excuse me. I'm in Valdosta, Georgia. And this guy talks about he sent stuff into space. You know, I stopped everything. I was like, man, we'll figure out the DVD player thing. Tell me about this, you sending stuff into space. And Brandon, he worked for NASA. And the part that was amazing to me was he went back to school. I think he said he took night classes to get a PhD in astrophysics in his spare time.
Yeah.
After he was working like as a janitor, he got tired of that. He went back to school and did night courses to get his PhD in astrophysics. And this guy was talking to me about it. And I mean, at first, when he said that, I said, okay, it sounds too good to be true. And then he started talking to me about the differences in how your car, your gas miles, when you go east to west versus going west to east, and it has something to do with the rotation of the earth. I said, okay, I get it. You're qualified. he was retired. And he was doing consulting one weekend a month, making 70% of his salary from NASA. And this guy walks into the Best Buy, and my mind was blown. But he said something to me the second time I saw him. When he came back to pick up the thing that I sold him, because I think we had to order it, he said, I was telling my wife, I hope that guy doesn't settle. And it was like the voice of God. At that point,
did the light shine down from heaven?
It felt that way. It really did. It was like I just sat there for a moment, and my whole world was shattered. I was like, "Yeah, what is that? Where in the hell am I? What am I doing here?" You know.
So, did you have a Jerry Maguire moment? You know, I'm going. Who's going with me? Or did you, try to figure out your next steps? Did it take you a little longer? I'm leaving. Bye.
So I never forget. Two things happened that gave me more of a boost. I was already thinking like, okay, strategically, what I got to do to get out of here? I got to find an entry-level job. That's the problem to solve. I got to find an entry-level technology job where I can put this degree to use. And what happened was, I never forget, I had one of my managers come by and, just say some really ignorant stuff to me about how I was performing in my job. And I thought to myself, why am I putting up with this? And then I had another customer walk in who was arguing with me about the specification of a computer, about how much RAM was in the computer. And he was telling me I was wrong. And I thought to myself, I sat in a class where we actually learned how this is built from scratch. Why am I sitting up here arguing with you about this, taking your insults? So. When that happened, I got up and decided to start applying for entry-level jobs. I applied for a job in Americus, Georgia, and it was going to be in a call center doing technical support in a call center. And then I had a buddy in Hilton Head, South Carolina, who was working at a small web development, web marketing company that was building websites for companies in the area, hospitality websites and stuff like that. And he reached out to me and said, hey, man. You want to come up and, interview with the job. And I remember driving to Hilton Head, South Carolina, and interviewed with them, got the job, and, moved up there. And I didn't have enough money from the job I was took because it was truly entry-level. I mean, they were paying me very low. But I kept my job at Best Buy and had it transferred to Savannah. And I was actually working in Savannah on the weekends and working in Hilton Head, South Carolina. So I was working like 60 hours a week so that I could get, I always tell people I was working 60 hours so that I could get those 40 hours a week worth of experience.
That's great. How much of a drive was that for you? So were you living in Hilton Head?
Yeah, yeah.
So how long did it take you to drive? I don't know.
It would take about 45 minutes to an hour, depending on traffic, to drive from Hilton Head down to Savannah. And from Savannah to Hilton Head.
Do you think if you had a mentor in college or right after college that it may have made things a little easier for you? Because you said you didn't have an on-ramp. So do you think that piece might have helped you, or did you have a mentor?
No, I didn't really have a mentor. I think what I should have done was I should have done some internships. I should have applied for more internships while I was in college. I don't think I applied for any internships. I think I just was being a lazy college student, really, truth be told. So, I mean, it could have made it easier, but, you know, I'm really happy with the journey, because I think it made me hungry to go through that. It made me appreciative, and it made me realize that life isn't easy, yet again, you know. But I got my first job. So what happened was the company in South Carolina, you know, they started having hiccups because they're such a small company. And then the company, you know, started having trouble. So I moved back home. The buddy I moved up there working with, he got a job in Atlanta. So I moved back home. And then I said, okay, well, I solved the problem. I got some experience. I got 7 months of experience programming, and, you know, professionally. That's still not a lot. Because they want you to at least, you know, having 2 or 3 years worth of experience to get an entry-level job. So I said, well, the only thing we can do is go back to square one, start applying for jobs, start sending out the resumes again. And I was home for maybe 2 weeks, and I was sitting there thinking to myself, I said, man, I still haven't left Morven. I'm back in Morven. And I got a phone call from a company in Norcross who does logistics work, or did, you know, they still do it, but they've been bought and, you know, changed names and stuff. And I never forget, the guy talked to me on the phone for about 30 minutes, and he said, we'd like to get you in here for an interview. He said, when can you come to Atlanta? It was a Tuesday. I told him I can't be there tomorrow, but I can be there Thursday. So I was like, I dropped everything I had going on, which was nothing, and hopped in the car. And drove up to Norcross and drove through a crazy rainstorm. It was my first time ever driving to Atlanta, because that's a big deal for people who don't live in Atlanta, like driving to Atlanta
for the first time.
It's like, what, all that traffic? Survived that. And my mom was in the car with me, because she was scared I was going to die on the highway. That boy going to go up that road. And, yeah, I could hear them talking, you know.
Oh, mom.
And I didn't even think she was going with me, but she, when I got ready, she was ready to go. And, so I said, all right. So,
I love it.
Yeah, she was like, how you, because she asked me, how you get to Atlanta? I said, I'm going to drive. Like, how's he, I'm going to get there, you know? And so I drove to Atlanta, and actually it was Tucker, and got off the highway and drove through the craziest rainstorm getting up here. It was insane.
How hard was she praying?
She was asleep most of the way. She was asleep after like the first 40 minutes on the road, like just out. I said, you might as well stay at home. You should sleep. You know, but she woke up and she kept me good company. And, you know, I had an interview and we were coming back. So she said, how was it? And I never forget, I told her, I said, well, you know, I had a good interview. I think I did. I said, but I've been down this path before too, where, you know, I have a good interview and somebody else with more experience comes along and they want to hire them because they can pay them the same thing they pay me, but with, you know, more experience. And my mom said something, I never forget. She said, what God has for you is for you.
And amen.
I was like, well, you know, it's a faith growing moment, you know, because for me, I'm sitting there like, yeah, okay, I believe that. I really do, but I haven't experienced it yet. Yeah, like it hadn't connected with me yet. And, you know, I like literally 30 minutes or 40 minutes later, I got a phone call. And the director who was in charge of HR, she said that the interview went extremely well and that they anticipated making a decision shortly. So that's kind of code speak in the industry for, hey, you got the job. Just don't.
We're going to call you. Don't take no other position.
That's it. Don't do nothing else. Don't do nothing else.
Just pause.
Just like, are you currently interviewing other places? No. All right. Then chill. We're going to handle some things. And yeah, they called me. I went, but I didn't stop. I was going back to get my job back at Best Buy. And I was in the parking lot at the Best Buy store. My phone rang, and it was my new boss calling me, telling me I got the job.
Look at God.
Yeah. And they gave me money to relocate with.
Yes, and, for the relocation fund.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it still wasn't enough. So mm-hmm. I had to go borrow money to do this with. So I went to the bank, took out an unsecured loan, like 25% interest, you know, APR.
That starting point.
Look, I just need an on-ramp. And I didn't care how it looked to anybody, you know, me doing it. I had to make it happen. And I slept on the floor. I had no furniture in my apartment. Apartment was full of roaches when I moved into it. So I fought the roaches because they weren't paying rent. I was. And I slept on the floor. I had a big air mattress, folding chair for my furniture. Had a box that my pots and pans came in, and I had a cooking sheet, and I used that as my table. That's what I ate off of.
Hell.
Yeah.
You've come a long way, man.
You know, yeah, like, God has been good, man. Yeah, you know, I am, you know, I put it this way, the progression, I don't know what anybody else's journey looks like. I didn't live their journey. I lived mine, and I can see moments where, you know, I can just see God doing things, pointing like, hey, this is it, you know. And so, yeah, got that first job, spent a year and a half there, and then got another job, and then spent 3 years there and just kept on kind of going, because now we're in an economy where you don't really put down roots. You just, unless you have a great company that you work at, yeah, that, you know, where you can have that longevity. But, you know, that's kind of what happened. So.
Okay. So, I know you've come a long way since that job and that first apartment, mm-hmm, but sometimes I feel like you're a bit like Tommy from Martin.
I ain't got no job.
You ain't got no job, man. So, but I know you have multiple things that you're working on. That's, so,
okay.
What are you doing, James?
What do I do?
What do you do?
What do I do?
Yes, please. Okay. Tell people.
What do I do? Specifically me. Specifically you. I got you. So, I have a job.
Yes.
I have a job. I do.
Good to know.
So what I do is I'm a software engineer. That's what I do.
You made it.
Yeah, I made it. been doing that now for over, I got a first job in March 2006, and here we are now in 2018. So, yeah, I've been doing it now for over 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll be 13 coming up on next March. So. I always celebrate that in my head because it's like a big deal, because I remember how hard it was getting that first job. And so I'm a software engineer. That's what I do. So, yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Okay. So how did computer engineering segue into podcasting and now, you know, this vlogging? Because I think that's what the kids call it.
The vlogging.
Videos. Yeah. Vlogging.
Yeah. I think it really comes out of the church work.
Okay.
So, I moved to Atlanta, didn't have a church home, and it really didn't bother me. I just kind of was enjoying not having anything to do on Sundays, you know. But there's a piece of my life that I knew wasn't right spiritually, because living like that, you have things that you become acutely aware of that need to be corrected in your life. And given, as we were saying in South Georgia, giving the Lord some of your time, that's part of it. It helps you center you and help you put your life in perspective. So I found a church home, and so they didn't have a Sunday school teacher, at least not a consistent one. And when the pastor of the church, who had just got to the church himself, asked me to teach Sunday school, I had experience teaching and Bible studies and stuff, so I said, sure, I'll do it.
Really?
Yeah. And it was a process of becoming not only engaging, but being more vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Because you can't point out people's flaws without addressing your own. Mm-hmm. And the best way to point out somebody else's flaw is to show the flaw in yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus has a way of saying it: before I point at the speck in your eye, I need to look at that plank in mine. Roughly paraphrasing that, the Jameson Smallwood version of the Bible. And so I used that technique to teach. And what happened was I became more and more open and transparent about my life, to the point where I was just telling these stories and just communicating this experience of my life to these people to try to help them understand these biblical concepts. The shortcomings, the highs, the lows, successes, the testimonies, the things I fell at, things that I, you know, would normally be embarrassed to share. It just all became very open and transparent. And I realized I'm telling these stories about my life, and I'm doing it in front of these people, without any reservation, without any, you know.
That's brave.
Yeah, without any thought, like, to my reputation or anything. Like, I'm just telling these people these stories, you know. And I think that gave me the experience of being vulnerable. So fast forward, you ask, how does that come about? So I think that's the on-ramp to that part of the podcast, the vulnerability. But then there's the Facebook stuff where I'm on Facebook and I have a social media presence. It's not like a huge following, but, you know, I have my friends and family, some people I have acquaintance with or whatever who follow me on Facebook. And I just, you know, I have a sense of humor and I have a way of being a bit provocative and stirring the pot and making people think about things and getting people to engage post. And I think I understand that psychology of it a little bit. So I can, you know, manipulate those triggers and those switches in people. So people start telling me at the end of 2017, hey, you should start a podcast. So for me, I'm podcasting because I have the encouragement of my friends telling me, hey, go podcast, which is interesting because some of the same people told me to podcast, some of the same people don't download, but that's another story. Another story. And
you should call them out.
Yeah, you should download the podcast, especially if you told me that, you know, the podcast.
Yes.
Why would you not do that, right? So, so I took that encouragement and I started podcasting. And then I sat down and said, well, you know, what am I going to podcast about? And I realized that all the experiences of working in church and ministering and articulating what we call the human experience, or whatever, however you define that, but just that cliche of life as a person living. I thought I had a way of being able to do that, that would be interesting and provocative, and also help create the stories that I wanted to tell by finding people who had their story and giving them a platform to tell it. So, you know, I took all of that gumbo, the ministry experience, the vulnerability, the technology background as a software person, right, and the computer guy, and I put all that together to form culture and conversation. Awesome.
So, and you've had some pretty interesting interviews. You know, I won't, you know, how I feel about your insecure interview. I'm still, you know, feeling slightly salty.
Episode 13.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, she's a great person. However, she has played her role way too well.
I know.
Way too well. Yeah.
No. Team Tasha. I'm still Team Tasha. So I can actually say this. Shout out to Dominique Perry, who was episode 13 on Culture and Conversation.
Shout out to her. But you a good man. Oh, I can't. Oh, it drives me crazy. I cannot. Okay, I'm sorry. But that just touches me in a place that I don't like.
That's why it's provocative.
It is. And so, it shouldn't be. But she did an outstanding job. Because everyone knows Natasha.
Everybody relates to that.
Yeah. And you had Squat Bay, which I thought was neat.
Yeah, Squat Bay, yeah. Shout out to Caitlin Elisa. Yeah, she was, I think she's episode 38 now. Yeah. Yeah, the woman, the episode's called Caitlin Elisa is the woman behind Squat Bay. Yeah. Because I was like, what happens when you become a meme? Like, and you think about, like, some of the show topics I've done where, we see memes every day. But when's the last time you heard an interview with somebody who's actually a meme? When have you heard?
Right. Never.
Yeah. Never. What was the magic behind that? Was it truly just this moment? Did you try to become a meme? Were you intentional about this? How did it happen? What was the goal? What was it? And it just turned out to be totally innocuous. It's just something that, you know, that just happened. So, and then on top of that, then you find out what her experience is like. Now that she is a meme, what is that like? You know, I thought it was really telling, for instance, where she talked about being at a friend's wedding and she didn't want to upstage her friend. You know what I mean? Like that's real. I'm like, oh, yeah, I get it. She can't just go around. She doesn't want to be low key because she's a celebrity, quote unquote. But, you know, she is trying to be respectful of people in certain moments because she doesn't want that meme to just spark up. You know, right.
She's like the Beyonce of her own life.
Of her own life. Yeah.
So who's the, like, big person or that you want to have on your podcast?
Oh, you know, I don't have anybody that's just, I'm clamoring to talk to. I think I'm just more in love with being a storyteller. So if you've got a good story to tell, then I'll talk to you on my podcast. If I can find the angle that I feel like needs to be discussed and expressed, I'll talk to you on my podcast. But to say like I'm targeting somebody, I can't say I am. You know, because, I mean, what happens is once you, and what I've experienced because of these people I've had a chance to talk to, like a Dominique Perry, like a Tristan J. Winger, who plays Thug Yoda on Insecure as well. You know, people I've had a chance to talk to and some of these conversations I've had a chance to have, mm-hmm. you realize that there's this layer between, you know, me and the rest of us normal people and quote unquote celebrity. And it's hard to pierce and it's a little bit interesting to pierce. So with that, I don't necessarily want to chase that because it's so much work just to get through that veil into these spaces where you can get people on your podcast. And then there's this idea of, you know, do you give enough value to them to spend, for them to spend 30 minutes of their time talking to you, you know,
what's in it for them?
What's in it for them? Right. And I think that's the part of that industry that I'm not really a fan of. So I try to be led by the story more so than by, oh, this name or this person, because at the end of the day, people still have to care about what I'm saying in terms of the podcast is Jameson Smallwood on Culture and Conversations. Right. And so I don't have anybody in particular, but sure. I mean, if you just, you know, if I'm just throwing names out there, I think it'd be cool to talk to somebody like, you know, maybe like Oprah, you know, sit down and talk to Bill Gates. You know, talk to him about technology, talk to just, you know, maybe, you know, I'm trying to get Pastor Troy on the podcast. I got his number in my phone.
Listen, if you get Pastor Troy, I may need to be here. Let me work your microphone. Like, I mean, he was such a part of my high school career.
But think about it. You think about somebody like Pastor Troy, for instance. When's the last Pastor Troy interview you heard where people don't get me wrong, he's done interviews.
Yeah.
But when's the last style of interview the type of interview I do that you heard him do?
Never.
Never.
I feel like every time I've heard him on an interview or something, it's like he's being a parody of himself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like he's being that crunk person on Ain't No More Play in GA.
Yeah.
But he's not really being
Micah.
That's
Troy.
His name?
Yes, his name is Micah Troy.
Oh, thank you, James. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was going to say Pastor.
No. That's it, right? Pastor. You can be Pastor Micah. You know? I want him to tell his story. You know what I mean? Like, I want him to hear us talk about how his music penetrated Morven, George the first day I heard No More Play in GA. He needs to know that because exactly. That's it. You know, I was trying to think of one of his lyrics.
Or vice versa.
Exactly. Vice versa. Or Champion. When I heard that song and heard the Goldberg music, I'm like, this is what's been missing from my life. He doesn't, I say this respectfully, you know, about him because I don't know him, but I just say respectfully. I didn't get a chance to meet him. That's how I got his number and all that stuff. So, it was smooth though. But I put it this way, the woman he was talking to, there was no way I was going to get his attention. You know, I just. I'm like,
the boom and the pal. You can't compete with the boom and the pal.
No. I was like, I see you, Troy. You still got it, brother. I see you. You're a long hunter. That's all I can say. And but when have you heard him talk to somebody? I'm not saying I'm Oprah. But when have you heard him talk to an intelligent person who can help him tell that story or at least can convey that emotion, that experience? In the way that I try to do it on Culture and Conversation.
You can have Pastor Troy unsung.
That's it.
Yes.
That's it. Like, he needs to hear it. Because he doesn't, I don't think he understands. He hears from people telling him all the time they love his music. But I don't think he understands, like, what his career meant to hip-hop in general. I think Magic Johnson would be cool to talk to as well.
Do you have enough tape for that? I feel like Magic Johnson talks real slow.
That's cool. That's the thing about a podcast. I can chop it up a bunch of ways.
Speed it up a little.
Yeah.
Okay. That's 3, 4?
Yeah. So that was Les, Oprah, Bill Gates, Magic. And you know what? I'm going to say this one. I'd like to talk to my dad on my podcast.
Yes. Yeah. You should do that. You know how when NPR, they have their StoryCorps stuff?
Uh-huh.
I think you should interview your dad on StoryCorps. Like, you can do, anyone can do that.
Hmm.
You should check into it. I think that's fun. I say I want to do my grandma, but I think you should interview your dad on that. So do both.
And I might try that.
Like, they put it in a vault, and so it's just there forever.
Forever, yeah. Mm-hmm. I might try that. So, we'll see.
I'm surprised you don't have any food people on there.
I mean, food is really a hard meat thing to communicate through through podcast medium. Even though I do like small bites, a show that a bonus show I do where I go around and review restaurants and talk about my sort of lifestyle stuff I do, and that's more of the blogger of what was it, blogging podcast, you know, blogging or whatever you call it. I think I'm gonna coin that phrase, blogging. I don't have anybody in food, man. None of these chefs really. I love chefs. I think they're dope. I did have one person on my podcast. Mm-hmm. He's really cool.
The macaroni and cheese boy.
Yeah, Ashley. Yeah. She was really cool. She goes by Foodie Cutie on Instagram. So her poached salmon, I've got to try that sometime. Mm-hmm. The poached salmon. Yeah, it was epic. It almost got to be X-rated. I was like, what is this salmon? What's in this salmon? So, you know. But that's one of the funniest parts about the podcasting experience and talking about interviewing people is that you have to keep it engaging and entertaining. And at the same time, you know, you don't want to come off as creep. I don't want to be some guy, you know, with like breathing into a microphone, you know. So tell me the next thing about yourself that is finger with a spoon. Yeah, like.
Good idea. Don't be that guy.
And that's one of the things that's part of what goes into soliciting people to be on the podcast too. Is like everything fits into that. How did I approach them? How did I reach out to them? What did I say to them in my opening email? How did I present myself? You know, and I think that's big because it really, you don't ever want to send that factor, that vibe out there. I hate the word vibe, but I get it. It's in circulation. You don't want to ever give that anybody that trigger that, oh, this guy's a creep. Mm-hmm. He's just, this podcasting thing isn't real. It's just a front. Yeah.
Speaking of being a creep, mm-hmm. or not being a creep.
Okay.
So, Jameson,
mm-hmm.
you're home alone.
Okay.
Smallwood Manor.
Yeah, Smallwood Manor. Yes.
What would people be surprised that you do G-rated version?
Okay. When I'm home alone?
When you're home alone.
Man, that's a good question. Guilty
well, pleasures, random hobbies.
People know I cook. People on the podcast might not know I cook, but they will at some point because I'm sure there's a cooking show. Maybe Culture in the Kitchen.
Yeah,
something like that.
We could have done that today.
Oh, yeah, I know. So people know I garden a little bit, but that's something that I do. Do handyman stuff for certain jobs around the church and at my house.
What's the last handyman project that you did?
The last one is I rebuilt the staircase, or repaired the staircase, I should say, at my church.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. I don't think there are a lot of people in our age range
mm-hmm.
who are handy.
Yeah.
That's interesting. You're like a unicorn.
That skill is kind of lost.
Mm, it is.
But then it's the same part of my brain that does the engineering work, the software mm. engineering stuff. It's the exact same part of my brain, except for I have the tactile piece of where I'm actually manipulating real elements. So instead of me manipulating code, I manipulate wood and, you know, screws and nails and all that stuff.
So do you think you could ever be Jameson the carpenter? I know you said your dad was a carpenter. Is a carpenter.
It's really hard work. Like, it's such hard work. But now I will say this. Him as a carpenter, I guarantee you he felt more accomplished more often than I do. Because so many software engineering projects fail. So you don't get that high of starting a something, seeing it, you know, become, and then seeing it finished. and then sitting back saying, man, I built that. You don't get that as often. He got that all the time, but I didn't get that at often. I don't get that at often. So he has houses he drives by and he's like, yeah, we built that house. Like, you know what, I'm like the whole house, you know, even the house we grew up in, he built. From
really?
Yeah, from scratch. Yeah, took out a $5,000 loan, and he bought $5,000 worth of building materials, put the rest of it together, and then built the house we live in.
That is insane.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody today can do that. Well, I mean, like, all right, I don't think I'm going to meet a man who's my age. He's like, yeah, building this house.
From scratch. Yeah, no mortgage.
That is crazy.
No mortgage. He took out $5,000 loan and built the house from nothing. You know.
That's fantastic.
So, but things I do for fun around the house in my spare time. Well, I think people know now I do write poetry still, even though it's very rare. I still write a little bit of poetry.
I remember that from college.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's an episode of Culture and Conversations, there's a couple episodes where you can hear some poetry, two episodes, I believe. So, yeah. But, yeah, that's what I do in my spare time. I mean, I'm a pretty normal guy. It's just, you know, I try to take care of my home. I don't have a lot of spare time with the stuff I do at church and then working out and trying to work out. And yeah, so, yeah, I think that's about the most spicy it gets. I'm still pretty, you know.
Real tang, real wholesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's life is easier to live that way for me. It is. You know, I have fun, don't get me wrong. I got a spicier side to me, but at the same time, it's just. In terms of my day-to-day life, it doesn't come out that much.
Okay.
But I do enjoy tequila. So, yeah.
Tequila?
Yeah.
Oh, damn.
So.
I can't drink it.
Tequila.
Unless
yeah.
In a margarita.
Yeah, I mean, I drink a lot of margaritas.
Okay. Yeah. So, what would happen for you to say, okay, I feel like I've made it? Or do you feel like you've made it?
Oh, man. I think it would take, I don't know, like, so this is the new quandary for me, I think, as we bring this conversation to an end, is what does it mean to make it? So this podcast, right? It'd be cool if the podcast had a very good listenership, a good audience, where it was a self-sustaining podcast so that the audience felt good enough about Culture and Conversations where it would, you know, the audience would patronize it and pay for certain pieces of it. Mm-hmm. And then that would give me the ability to kind of, you know, take that and kind of begin to broaden it a little bit. That'd be great. Now, in terms of other, you know, people have asked me other things, like maybe this leads me to making other content, which would be dope. Creating other, you know, pieces of content and putting out. And I've started a company called Smallwood Media Productions. So all of this stuff fits underneath that.
Okay.
So right now it's a labor of love. It's a lost leader, as they would say in business. Nothing is coming from it monetarily. But that's cool. I'm not doing it for that because I don't want people thinking that I did Culture and Conversations to make money.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why I did it. You know, my other job pays me well. So making money from Culture and Conversations isn't what I'm trying to do. What I'm trying to do is build something that is a source of intellectual, emotional, social, and on some level, not though it's not the emphasis, a spiritual treasure chest that's in the podcast format. Mm-hmm. Part of me having these conversations is that I get to talk to people about things I'm really curious about. So I've got an interview coming up with a friend tomorrow who is a prosecutor. And here he is, African-American man in South Georgia who's a prosecutor. He is one of the guys who determines what happens to you, how, hey, are we going to prosecute you or even go through the trouble of trying to, you know, lock you up? He has a lot of say in that. And for me, I'm interested in his perspective. I'm interested in what inputs he takes into his mind when he looks at situations and circumstances of people to come out with a decision of, hey, we're going to prosecute this guy. What is there any leniency? Is there any grace there? Curious about that. All of that story of becoming Even your story about you did on your episode, you talked about working at my sister's place in Gainesville, Georgia, and helping women who are homeless and dealing with these brutal transitions in their life. That to me, that's gold. Where did that come from? How do we get our people, our kids, our children, other adults to understand that? How do we highlight that? How do we show that? Because I think that's the thing about culture and conversations is that everybody has a great story if they just tell it. And I think that also in the age of cell phones and everybody using Snap, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook-y things to communicate, people don't talk anymore. And that's part of what, to me, if people find value in that, again, because of culture and conversations, then I'll feel like I've made it in the podcast. In terms of professional work, like what pays the bills and keeps Smallwood Manor running, quote unquote, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think I'm on a good trajectory where I can make money in the next decade, save money in the next decade, and, you know, be strategic about, you know, getting ready for one day to possibly retire, you know, down the line. I think the next decade sets up very well for me. I've got some really interesting avenues that I can explore with other larger companies who are out there. And I've interviewed with some of them, and I'm learning that process of how to get through those interviews and work my way through that stuff. So possibly that might be something. But I'm at a place where I'm not motivated by money anymore. And
that's a good point.
It's, you know, don't get me wrong, I have to still work for money, but I'm not chasing the mythical dollar amounts anymore that I used to have written down thinking that, oh, if I just made this, then I'll be happy. I made it, and I'm like, okay, well, guess I'm happy. And then I kept saying, well, okay, there's no, you know, I don't need to make any, I can't make any more, and then I made more. So I was like, okay. Now I'm just like, okay, making more money doesn't do it for me. Obviously, I've got that experience of making more. That doesn't fulfill me. So career-wise, I think what my goal is, to go back to what I said about my father, I want to build things and look back at it and say, I built that. And even in technology, it's such a brutal space because nothing has permanence. Everything is always being replaced. Innovation is always being strived after. So you don't get to see your stuff last that long, but it would be nice to have made some mark in technology where people look back on it and say, oh, Jameson made that. I remember when that was the thing, even if it was only for like 5 years, which is the eternity in technology. So I think for me to feel like I've made it would be when I have more of a legacy kind of thing accomplished. And I think right now, not to sound arrogant, but I think I'm at a point where I can start thinking about the on-ramp to building a legacy. I think I've been just laying the groundwork and getting some tools in place to begin to think about building a legacy. So now I think that's the next step for me, is to be more intentional in the, maybe the next decade, the next 20 years of, you know, of life, to start thinking about legacy and pouring out into people. And I think that all that brings comes full circle to this whole venture of creating media around my life in some way where people can have it and they can say, oh, wow, this guy, he gave us this of himself. Whether it's a technology accomplishment, whether it's a great set of interviews or something motivational I put out on the internet, whatever, it's all of that fits into that umbrella. And I don't think I have to compromise myself to do it. So I'm cool with chasing that experience and seeing what that would be like.
Awesome. Well, one last question. I'm sort of circling back a bit. Mm-hmm. We were talking about in college, you said you didn't really do internships, mm-hmm. and possibly having a mentor may have helped you. Mm-hmm. You know, you were just sort of this unique person, and so you were just sort of doing your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm confident there are other younger Jamesons coming up.
Okay.
Have you thought about mentoring, or are you a mentor? Is that something you're interested in? You know, that's a part of building a legacy.
Yeah, I think replication is the one of the signs of maturity in all areas of life, whether it's biological, whether it's spiritual, whether it's professional. You want to replicate. So Yeah, I'm open to mentorship, and I have time to do it. You know, I think it's challenging because there are people. I do a little bit of that professionally. I get a taste of that sometimes when we have like a junior developer come in, and but in terms of our community, I would love to do more of that. That's a goal I have of something I want to do is start, you know, working more with kids who want to have interest in technology. You know, it's not easy as it sounds, because part of being a mentor is building the relationship, sometimes top down instead of bottom up. A lot of times we look for mentees who are going to be more aggressive about coming up to us and pursuing us. And I know I'm guilty of that at times, but sometimes you have to reach down and say, okay, I know you don't know how to build this relationship. I'm going to just do it for you, and we're going to do this together, and I'm going to pour into your life. So, yeah, we'll see. So if there's somebody who wants to, you know, get some time to learning about software and learning how to put together a podcast and, you know, just all the things that I've learned and the mistakes I've made and the experiences and take that wisdom from it. Yeah, I'm open to that, you know. So I'm able to do that right now. This part of my life, because I don't have a lot of the things that a lot of people have to deal with, you know, at this stage of life. So I'm cool. I'm free and flexible to do those things. So.
Awesome. I think you should pursue that. So I'm interested. I'm going to push you towards that.
Okay.
I'm going to be a pusher.
Okay.
We're going to find you a mentor.
Okay. You're not going to be pusher T. You're going to be pusher B.
I'm here for that. Yeah. Nice. I feel like I need to put that on Instagram or something. That's my new Instagram. Pusher B.
That's it. Yes.
Thank you, Jameson. That was a jewel. I'm going to use that.
This is what happens on the Culture and Conversation podcast. Episode 1 of the Sit Down. Yes.
Well, this has been fun, Jameson. I have enjoyed interviewing you.
Cool.
I'm glad you let me do this.
You got me to be open about some things and reflective on some things. So it turned out to be good. So hey, thank you guys so much for listening to that first episode of The Sit Down, the video content for Culture and Conversations. Be sure to check the YouTube channel, Culture and Conversations, for more content. You have to kind of search for it because I don't have a custom URL yet. But if you go and subscribe, that helps make it possible for me to get to that custom URL sooner. YouTube has all these rules and we have to follow them because, hey, that's the platform. Well, if you want to stay in touch with the show on Facebook and watch the videos as well, you can do so at Culture and Conversations. That's our Facebook page. If you want to reach out to me on Instagram, Culture and Conversations is the Instagram page. And if you want to send me an email, cultureandconversations@gmail.com. And finally, as my goddaughter would say,
my goddaddy made this.
Yeah, that's right. Hey guys, thank you so much. And once again, special shout out to Brandy Thomas for making it possible for me to record that interview. I appreciate her bringing her journalistic skills to the table, and she helped so much to give me an opportunity to tell my story. So, hey guys, be good. I hope you know the host a little bit better now. Peace.